All right. Well, thanks for letting me do this anyway. Like, I spent probably, 4 hours today making a list, but because it was the first set that I purchased, I think that I'm the best person to make a top 10 list of the Uncanny X-Men set, so I'm good to go.
So you spent 4 hours today making this list, huh?
Well, during work, on and off, as time elapsed, as it were. Whenever I had a spare moment, I just started working. I at one point had 25 people on this list, and I've started narrowing it down. About an hour ago, I finally just said, "Okay, I gotta get this done." So we're finally good to go.
Well, I got to tell you, I applaud your diligence, especially given that it's Avengers versus X-Men today.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I'll see you in 4 hours, right? Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 61 of The Reserve Pool. This is, of course, the podcast for people who love Dice Masters, the podcast about Dice Masters, and all of you people who love it. So that was sort of a palindrome sort of phrase there. It works. It's symmetrical. We like symmetry on this show. Back on The Reserve Pool for the very first time since he and the other Randy tried to usurp my throne as king of this podcast, we have RJ Retro. Hello, sir. It's great to have you on this show.
And I will commend you for not actually allowing us to take over, because we tried really hard to steal
you
that
did.
Podcast.
You really did. Well, you did a wonderful job. Of course, we're talking about the episode that was just after Worlds. I don't have a number listing here, but it included an interview with the world champion Dean and a host of other great topics that we're all about the aftermath of that wonderful competition at Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio.
It was a lot of fun. I didn't realize it's been that long, however. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that, I think.
Yeah, that was over a month ago, so probably 4 or 5 episodes back.
Man.
I know. We were so young and idealistic those days.
It's fun being old.
Says the baby of the network.
Yeah, that's weird. 29 years old and I'm the baby. But anyway.
Wait, 29?
29.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, we're tied. But No, Randy's younger than us. Wait a minute.
Randy's younger than us? He's got four kids.
Yes, he does.
We're doing it wrong, Dave.
I think something's up, yeah. So we've never gotten to really have you go through our structure here. I will say that in order to be an effective co-host on this show, I mean, I know you've listened, but I hope you understand there's sort of this social contract for the co-host using a whole lot of puns.
Am I supposed to do it? Because I thought that's why Evan was gone, that you finally just had enough and said, "Evan," and you punished him, as it were.
Wow. It's like Evan's right here speaking to me. No, Evan is simply on a boat as we record this episode, so what can you do? I'm really excited to hear you talk about our little first word segment here. I'm curious about all the ways that you've played, and admittedly, it's a little bit different, and we talked about that last week. You've relied on the online play, and then, of course, with Alana a little bit more than anything else. The best win that you've had, the best experience winning a game that you've had with Dice Masters.
Oh, my goodness. You have to understand, Dave, I've watched you play Dice Masters on web streams. I've seen you dominate. I've watched you just play some excellent, amazing games. And my co-host...
Not so much at Worlds.
Well, even at Worlds, I think you did okay with the team that you had. But Shadowmeld is another really good player, and I have to watch him every single week as we're preparing for the prep area. And there's so many people that are talented on this website, and it's awesome knowing that I'm without question the worst of everyone that works on the website on thereservepool.com. So my biggest win, although I've been playing since about March or April or something like that, my biggest win was within the last month, because I finally felt like I had found a team that worked for my style of play, and it was my Little Cup Avengers team, which only uses commons and starter set characters, because it was that team where I was able to sort of counter everything to a point where I felt like I could win any game that I played. I successfully found out the way of destroying Apologies in Advance, which is probably my legacy when it comes to Dice Masters, and that's the using Iron Man Playboy, which is not on my top 10 list, but I wanted to put it on there so bad. But it was a big win that I had multiple wins, actually, where I kept playing people and kept winning, and I kept tweaking the team just a little bit. And it's such a good feeling when you build that first team pretty much by yourself, and it works. And I'd started with this Little Cup Avengers skeleton, and then I just kept tweaking it, and although the Maria Hill thing sort of soured it a little bit, who cares? I'll throw Falcon back on it. Still a ton of fun. Maybe I'll put the Spider-Woman on it. I don't know. The point is, it rekindled my love for the game and has really helped me become a better player. So my biggest win is probably within the last month with Little Cup Avengers, just because of how much fun I've been having playing it. And I feel like I've grown leaps and bounds since I started building that team.
So Iron Man Playboy, of course, is the one from Avengers versus X-Men. Each time Iron Man takes damage in the attack step, he deals 3 damage to one opposing character that is attacking or blocking.
Yeah, so the way you shut down Apologies in Advance with that is you have Fireball, and Beholder has to enter the attack zone to start imprisoning stuff. And so he has to use Fireball. So he's either going to free everything immediately, or he's going to do it the next turn. And so you just have to make sure that you have Iron Man out at that right time. I like pairing him with Mr. Anger, Nick Fury, which is also not on my top 10 list, but I wanted to put it on there so bad because it lets you field your Avengers for free. So
it's a good common.
Yeah, you're saving so much energy just by saying, you know what, okay, Captain America's on the field for free. Oh, Hulk's on the field for free. It's such a good card and such a good Little Cup card. And so there's a that sort of Fireball Iron Man combo, which just shuts down AIA, in my humble opinion.
Well, I would say that Nick Fury, Mr. Anger, is in fact one of the very first cards that I started really messing around with when I first got into the game. I'm like, oh, Field Avengers for free? That looks like fun.
Oh, yeah.
And so Avengers was definitely the very first tribe of the many tribes that we now have within Dice Masters that I just kind of had a romp with. So
it's a very good card.
It is. It is. Especially, you know, for a comet. Now, it can be outclassed in the eyes of some by another version of Nick Fury, perhaps, you know, that we could talk about later, maybe. I don't know. Spoilers. But it's a good card in its own right. It certainly holds its own.
And in Little Cup, if you're running an Avengers team, Mr. Anger is Mr. Necessary.
Well, we had a question last week about the need for economy management right now because of the way that some of the fielding costs are skewing a bit higher. And I think that Mr. Anger could make a case for himself on some Avengers teams, even in a more serious tournament scene, because of the cost of the Avengers. Avengers are working great together right now, and we just got a plethora of them with this new set. I mean, you know, some of them are not that cheap to field. It's possible that Mr. Anger, being a pretty cheap purchase and not an expensive field in his own right, could work his way up a little bit. It's possible. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying it's out there for the trying.
In some metas, it has happened and it will continue to happen because, and the streak continues, I will talk about Giant Man on another podcast. You don't care if you roll him on level 3 where he costs you more to get out there or level 2 because you're fielding him for free. Hulk, one of the biggest issues with him is that level 2, level 3 face where you've got to pay 2 or 3 energy. And if you're not running something like Professor X, maybe you don't have a ton of energy to spend in the first place. So Mr. Anger lets you save on all of those and still be able to buy things and keep your ramp going, etc., etc. I do think Mr. Anger will make more of an appearance, but I mean, everybody knows already, and if they didn't, well, you're about to learn something that you should have already known. There is another Nick Fury that is incredibly good that we will, both of us, have in our top 10 because it is the go-to Avengers card. I'm so excited for this episode and for this top 10 because looking back at the very first set, a lot of those cards, a lot of those characters, a lot of the dice are still very relevant today, and some of them are still the best. Some of the best characters in the entire game, in any meta, doesn't matter what you're playing, just incredible. And something from every rarity level as well, because I have commons, one uncommon, a few rares, and some super rares, so everything is represented on this list.
I'm with you. I have a couple of uncommons, a common myself. I mean, it's remarkable. Well, you know, the thing is that as we get new sets, things that were good, maybe they tail back a little bit. Like, for example, I think there are some cards that will certainly be hit by the fact that the Captain America in this set in Age of Ultron, that is the way that he is. And that's going to temper some things. It's not going to eliminate them, but it's going to reduce it. I think it's going to serve to balance. But there are remarkable cards in Avengers versus X-Men. And it's not that they couldn't come with something else that's better than them. No, they've been working for balance. I think that's pretty clear if you look at what's in this set. If we had things that could just outclass them, then we'd have a massive, massive power creep problem. And that hasn't been the case to this point in Dice Masters. No, we get new cards and we start to see new ways that old cards are useful once more. Perhaps even cards that we hadn't considered become useful. You know, it wasn't really until, getting Magic Missile and or Slifer the Sky Dragon that people really started to look at Nova the Human Rocket and say, huh, maybe we can really make something with that. And that was evident at U.S. Nationals.
It certainly was, and I would say as well that being able to ping your own characters really started to, change the meta to, or at least skew it to where a lot of people, you look at Canadian Nationals where most people were trying to prepare for this one card. Someone did, and they became the champions. So, and I think we're going to talk about both of those cards a little bit later on.
I think we will too. Another point that you brought up earlier, you discussed Professor X, and maybe you don't have that and can't get some of the energy. It's interesting that we are starting to really see people shy away from using Professor X. Not that nobody is using him, not that he's suddenly less useful, but I think people are seeing what happens, one, when somebody else brings Professor X and you didn't bother, you get a free card essentially because nobody's buying that Professor X on most teams. And two, just finding alternative ways to ramp that don't give your opponent an opening either or aren't vulnerable to things like the dreaded prismatic spray or something else like that. So, again, old things become more useful, old things become less useful. Everything evolves, and that's really cool. And I think some of the cards that we're going to talk about a little bit later on today, even though some of them are familiar ones, the way that we're using them has become just a little bit different, many of them.
And the fact that people are getting so much better at the game and the skill level is so much higher. You have the opportunity to bring an extra card against your opponent. That is massive. If you don't have to be the one providing Professor X, but you get to throw in an extra counter in there, you are looking so much better than your opponent. And if you are prepared to play without Professor X, that's pretty good too. Professor X does speed up the game. It allows you to buy those big cost characters very quickly, much more quickly than you would normally. But if you are prepared for that extended game, you are so much better off. That being said, there is something to be said about Professor X, knowing he's going to be there, knowing how to play for it, and not really having to change your strategy a lot. I'm really glad that the Professor X cards were not in this set, because originally I made the mistake and thought they were. Yeah, thinking, where am I going to put that in the list? If we ever did a top 10 uncanny X-Men set, it's tough. It's a very tough conversation to have.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Well, you know, I think the other thing with Professor X, what I'm finding in the teams that I'm constructing these days, if I'm including Professor X, it's because I absolutely need that speed for things to work. And I can maybe survive without that speed if I get Prismatic Sprayed or something like that. But I need that speed in order to work. I'm even willing to pay some life to the Jinzo or Wasp cards if I need to, because it's just such an advantage to the team. But if it doesn't work that way, I'm using other means. I'm looking at the Blue Eyes White Dragons. I'm looking at Swarm. I'm looking at, well, whatever else we have out there. And I think that's making things very, very fun, because now we're starting to see these cards fit into, you know, certain niches rather than just anything. So rather than try and hold everybody's anticipation and, you know, let that build and just kind of keep talking about how we're going to talk about stuff later, let's delay even more by listening to what everybody else on the network is up to right now.
This is Isaac BV coming to you with a new segment here on the flagship show, The Reserve Pool. Many of you buy, sell, and trade for cards and dice to complete your collections or to get that elusive card that you've been trying to play with. But how do you determine what the best price is to pay or the value of the card you're trying to sell? Is it worth it for me to trade, let's say, my Serena for the common Vixen, or am I getting too good of a deal with that? In the financial world, we take a look at stock market prices, and we look at stock market reports to give us updates on the rise and the fall of stock prices and an overall value assessment. Today, I would like to give you that information in the form of Dice Masters and what I would like to call the dice market. First off, how do you determine the value of a card? There are many avenues to determine this information, including websites that sell cards and dice individually, trade groups on social media sites like Facebook and Reddit, and trade forums like the ones found on the Reserve Pool website. I personally think eBay is our best barometer for the value of a card because it is where we can really determine what a card is worth based on what people are willing to pay for it. So taking a look at the buy it now prices and the sold listings for the Avengers vs. X-Men super rares is where I'd like to start this week. We may not have a Power 9 as of now, but with enough traction, years, and interest, we may someday get there. And the cards that we'll see in that list years from now may be a couple of these four super rares from this set. Did you know that a gem mint alpha version of the Black Lotus from Magic the Gathering in the last few years sold at auction for over $27,000? We may not be there right now, but here are some of the values of the super rares from the Avengers vs. X-Men set as showing when it comes to resale value. For the month of July so far, on Cool Stuff Inc., you will find prices for the super rare Gabi listed at $60. His average buy it now price for the month of July on eBay has been $47. Serena on Cool Stuff sells for $59. Her average buy it now price on eBay was $55. On Cool Stuff, you'll find Mr. Fantastic Super Rare for $22. The average eBay buy it now price was $18. And last but not least, Wolverine Super Rare Knucklehead on Cool Stuff average sells for $32. On eBay, that same Super Rare averaged $23 for the month of July thus far. So as you can see, the price that you will pay on a website is a little more than you'll pay on average on eBay. The price doesn't seem to fluctuate a lot, but you're paying around the same cost for your Gabi Serena, followed by Wolverine, and last, and possibly least in the set, the Mr. Fantastic. That's all we have today for this Dice Market Report. Join us next time when we take a look at the Uncanny X-Men set and the value of those super rares.
Two Randys make a Dice Master set in 5 minutes.
This week, Rock Legends.
Joan Jett, subtitle, I Love Rock and Roll. Two cost, team affiliation, CBGBs, uses the Constantine die, her ability, all other CBGB characters get +1 defense.
Chad Kroger of Nickelback, four cost mask using the Red Tornado die. When Chad Kroger attacks, he chooses an opponent who must look at this photograph they cannot block.
That's terrible. Dave Grohl, subtitle, frontman of the Foo Fighters, cost 4, die Baron Zemo. Dave Grohl gets +1 attack, +1 defense whenever another of your characters gets KO'd.
Here's my Dave Grohl, 3-cost bolt, goblin attack, force, die. Of course, from the Foo Fighters. When Dave Grohl attacks, flip a coin. Heads, he learns to fly. Tails, he does not, falls off stage, breaks a leg, and must cancel his European tour and gets KO'd.
Janis Joplin, queen of psychedelic soul, 4-cost, team affiliation, Woodstock, uses the Beholder die. Janis Joplin gets -1 defense for every other character die in your field.
Fred Schneider, 2-cost fist, the Ant-Man die. Of the B-52s, when Fred Schneider blocks, you may hop in your Chrysler that's as big as a whale, and it's about to set sail. If you do, gain 2 life.
I didn't understand any of that. Steve Perry, lead singer of Journey. 4-cost, no team affiliation, uses the Kobold die. When Steve Perry is KO'd, you must stop believing.
Kobold. Oh, that poor, poor gentleman. Brian Wilson, lead singer of the Beach Boys. 3-cost, shield with the Drow assassin die. When Wilson is fielded, choose a sidekick. That sidekick is now the T-Bird. As long as the T-Bird is in the field, Wilson gets +2/+2. If your daddy takes the T-Bird away, the fun stops and Wilson gets KO'd.
Brian May, guitarist for Queen, 5-cost, uses the Buster Blader die. When Brian May attacks alone, he gets +3 attack. He has some wicked solos.
Speaking of Queen, I choose Freddie Mercury, 4-cost fist, Lord of D, die. If Mercury is in the attack zone for any reason, you may pay one generic energy to sing, goodbye, everybody, I've got to go, gotta leave you all behind and face the truth. He goes back to the field zone.
I believe games with that character may take forever. David Lee Roth, the real lead singer of Van Halen, 5-cost, hair metal affiliation, Emma Frost die. When fielded, KO all active Sammy Hagars. All other hair metal characters get plus one attack, plus one defense.
I like it. Elvis Presley, 4-cost bolt, the Iron Man, AOU, die. The King! When Elvis Presley is fielded, he gets plus three for that turn and the next. After that, he gets fat, eats jelly donuts, and cannot attack anymore.
I also have Elvis Presley, the King. 6-cost, Lord of D, die. While Elvis Presley is active, opposing characters with a fielding cost of 0 are hypnotized by his gyrating hips and cannot block. When he's on a burst face, it's a fielding cost of 1 or less instead.
Don't show him on television, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody from Elvis Presley's time, Buddy Holly, 3-cost, shield, vampire, die. And the crickets, as his subtext. Buddy Holly may always choose whichever blocker he wants blocking him. Your opponent may pay 5 generic energy to KO him and 2 sidekicks, a.k.a. the Big Bopper and Richie Valens.
That's just a little too close to home. Joey Ramone, Hey Ho, Let's Go. 5-cost, CBGB team affiliation, uses the Punisher die. When Joey Ramone attacks, other attacking characters get plus 2 attack.
Rivers Cuomo, 2-cost, shield the black man to die. From Weezer, when Rivers attacks, you may flip a coin. Heads, he is playing rock and gets plus one tails. He's playing something else and gets minus one.
That's fairly appropriate. David Bowie, changes. 6-cost, uses the Shazam die. Pay a mask, David Bowie gains the team affiliation of your choice until end of turn.
No ground control to Major Tom. Here's Stephen Page, 2-cost fist, the daredevil die. From Age of Ultron, the bare naked lady subtext. If Page is ever alone in the field, a.k.a. leaves the band, he loses plus one, or gets minus one. If you want, you can have Page do whatever Brian Wilson did on the previous turn for free.
And here's my last character, Slash, guitar god. 7-cost, hair metal team affiliation. Uses the Sentinel die from Uncanny X-Men. When Slash attacks alone, he gets Overcrush.
Weird Al Yankovic, 3-cost mask, the gelatinous cube. The king of parody, when Weird Al is fielded, he may steal the abilities of an opposing die, but those abilities become a little bit stronger.
I love it. On to the basic actions. You kick us off, RJ.
Lip-syncing on Saturday Night Live, 3-cost. Choose a character. That character gets caught lip-syncing on Saturday Night Live. They must do an awkward jig and then go to the prep area.
Stage dive, 4-cost. Choose a character. All opposing characters must block this character if able.
Yoko Ono, 4-cost. Play this action. John Lennon cannot be fielded, and all other Beatles get minus one.
Number one hit, 3-cost. Place this die on a character card. This character gains the Dice Master's equivalent of First Strike.
Age of 27, 5-cost. Play this action. All your opponent's characters turn 27 and get KO'd.
Collaboration, 4-cost. 2 characters get plus 2 attack, plus 2 defense until your next turn.
Fight the real enemy, 3-cost. Choose a sidekick who goes on Saturday Night Live, sings an a cappella song, and then rips up a picture of the Pope while saying, fight the real enemy. That character's career is over and gets KO'd.
Going platinum, 2-cost. Target character gains Overcrush.
Head of Bat, 2-cost. Make your character bite off the head of a bat. He can't get KO'd this turn.
Greatest Hits, 5-cost. Choose a character. If this character is unblocked, they get plus 4 attack.
That's 2 Randys. Make a set.
What's your suggestion?
So as you may have guessed from the very cautious discussion we had, I don't know, maybe we were being coy enough, RJ. I'm not sure. We are going to be talking about the top 10 cards from Avengers vs. X-Men that you should own. There are plenty of new players who have gotten into the game, and they maybe don't have this set, and they're wondering, well, what? I don't want to buy this entire thing. It can be a little hard to find at times. What do I want to try and get from this set? What are the impact cards that can help me build better teams and move forward without worrying about the fact that I wasn't in? And if you already have all this stuff, well, it's a list, and RJ, don't people just love to argue about lists?
Oh, I'm so excited to argue about this list with you, and I'm not being sarcastic. This is going to be so much fun for me. I love making lists. I love ranking cards. I love trying to determine what was the greatest card in the set? What is the greatest card? What will be the greatest card, etc.? And this has changed for me in the last couple of months, because my number one card that you must have is one of the only ones in the set that I do not have, and I have been watching the internet like a hawk trying to find it. And so I am so ready to go. I'm getting goosebumps, Dave. I'm getting goosebumps. I feel like I'm talking to Dave Letterman, by the way, by the way I'm saying Dave. Like, I'm ready, Dave. Let's do it.
All right, Paul. So,
I am Canadian.
Let's start this off then. My number 10 is, in fact, higher up on RJ's list.
Well,
so
I can top you on that, because my 10 is higher on your list.
Wow.
So it's really, it's really a top 9.
It is at this point. Really, it is. All right, so my number 9, Venom, Angelo Fortunato. This is, of course, the rare Venom. And he does a lot of really interesting things. For one, if you are not a Fist character, you're going to have a bad time, because your opponent's non-Fist characters get -2/-2. On his Burst Face, which he has two of those, your Fist characters get +1/+1. And he does have a global, pay Fist to spin an opponent's Fist character down one level. The only drawback there, of course, that can be used against you. He is a 6-Fist villain. I think that this card is so interesting. We saw him on a lot of teams at Nationals trying to hedge some bets there. And I think he fits really interestingly into the Johnny Swarm team, or really anybody that wants to use those swarming cards, which are Fists, as a win condition. And I just think it's a fantastic card. I love Venom in general. And that's my number 9, is Angelo Fortunato.
I feel if Evan was here, he would make some sort of fortunate joke. And I really struggled with this card, because I wanted to put it in my top 10 as well. Not super high up, but somewhere near the bottom. I couldn't justify doing it, though, because I had the opportunity to buy this card, and I didn't. I'm a big fan of Venom. I am a huge fan of Eddie Brock for some strange reason. But when it comes to Angelo Fortunato, it just doesn't seem to fit within my play style. That being said, there is a huge advantage in fielding Venom and not letting your opponent field any of their kobolds. And, well, I mean, they can, but they're going to get knocked out right away. And their sidekicks as well. This is a really good card. And I think that if you are using a strategy where you really don't want your opponents to field their Fist characters, Angelo Fortunato
it's
will shut them
it's
down.
Non-Fist characters, actually. So the kobolds would be fine, your opponents. But it can buff your kobolds.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, your level 3 Sturge, instead of being a 3-1 and easy to ping away with a magic missile, he becomes a 4-2. And is, of course, unblockable if you're using the super rare. It just really makes things into, you know, another kind of force to be reckoned with.
That's the second time I've misread a minus-minus card this week, the other one being the Doctor Doom. And now I'm thinking that maybe I should go and pick this up, because it's non-Fist characters. That's 3 of the 4 energy types that are out there, getting -2/-2, plus you may boost your own Fist characters.
Yeah, that can make a significant difference, and his stats are pretty darn good to boot. 4-4, 5-5, 6-6. They're not Hulk, but they're really good, considering that, well, he himself is a Fist character, so if he's on his Burst Phase, he's actually 6-6 or 7-7.
That is pretty nice. Okay, good choice for your number 9.
Why, thank you, sir. Tell me about your number 9.
And I'll try to get it right, actually. Spider-Man Web-Slinger. And I'm pretty sure that I was going to be the only person that would ever put this on a top 10, but it fits on so many different types of teams that I play. It's the 5-cost Fist from the AVX set, obviously. When Spider-Man assigns to attack, you may pay Fist to force every opposing character to block him if able. I really like this card. I really enjoy playing it, because it doesn't really matter what sort of combat tricks my opponents are trying to use. I mean, if they're going to use Mystic Box Globals and Transfer Power Globals and stuff like that, well, okay, but I can do the same thing. Just being able to get my characters through for big damage is huge. And if I'm using some sort of Avengers team where I want to get unblocked damage through, it's going to really hurt my opponent really quickly. I also like using this card as a type of removal, just because by forcing every opposing character to block Spider-Man, I can choose where that damage is going and determine who I'm sending out. And Spider-Man doesn't have a huge fielding cost either. He's a 0-1-1, so I don't mind if Spider-Man dies and I have to reroll him in next turn. It doesn't bother me at all, because I'm probably going to hit for a lot of damage. So I'm probably the biggest fan of Web-Slinger out there. I did think about putting Spider-Bomb on here or something, but I just think that he's been sort of nullified ever since the Errata went out, and Webslinger just fits my the type of team that I play more often, much better.
I think the Spider Bomb still has a place. He can still do something effective, and indeed, I think we saw Randy do something really neat with him recently. I like Webslinger. I think he probably would have been in my 11 through 20. But the one problem that I do have with him... Okay, so there's two things. Here's why I like him. Instead of having to relentless this and this and this and this, I can just pay a fish and everybody's got to block him. But at the same time, I had to invest 5 energy into purchasing him and get him on the field, whereas relentless is a little more on demand. So the only... I mean, it's sort of a little bit of give and take there. And of course, because it's only available to you, whereas relentless is available to everybody, you know, there's going to be, again, that give and take. But that's what holds him back just a little bit for me. I think while the fielding cost is great, you're investing a lot in that character that you don't actually intend to do any damage.
But you can, because he does have some decent stats out of 3-3, 4-4, 5-5. And when we're talking about using globals with a card that can also second as a body, I look at your number 8, which we're about to talk about, and
yeah.
I love this card.
Oh, my number 8?
Your number 8, because it's sort of similar, you know? It's got that, well, hey, I'm using...
It is, and well, you could criticize it for the same reasons that I just criticized Spider-Man just a little bit. So I guess we'll move into that. My number 8 is Deadpool Jack, and I've always liked this card. Of course, we saw Dean show us how to use it at Worlds. So this is the 5-fist. When Deadpool attacks, you may assign an opposing character to block him. At the end of the turn, knock out that character. Now, the cool thing with this is that it's reusable. So if you... All that matters is that you have that character that you assign to block him. It doesn't matter that Deadpool is still attacking or not, because he's still a blocker. So at the end of the turn, you're knocking out that character that you assigned. I can distraction Deadpool back or do something else fancy with it, and your character's still getting knocked out. So I have a little bit of targeted removal right here, and Deadpool still returns to the field, a very effective blocker because he's 4, 5, and 7 on his defensive stats. I'm a big fan of Deadpool Jack.
It's pretty nice that you generally don't have to pull him back, like you said, because he is so, as Patty would say, he has a big butt. You're not going to knock him out very often. Pretty good fielding costs for those stats. I like Deadpool. Jack is actually on my poker team, you know, of the Ace, King, Queen, Jack, 10, 9,
yes,
etc. I am a big fan of Deadpool. He's probably 11 or 12 for me. He was on my list of cards that I needed to pick up when I started purchasing this set.
Absolutely. And of course, this one sits at uncommon, so it's not like it's a very, very difficult time getting one of these.
No, not at all. And even though he's a 5-cost fist like Spider-Man, I think Deadpool certainly does bring a lot to the table, so you don't mind paying that much.
So we continue the trend towards removal with your number 8 pick, and I'm really curious about this one, so why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, let's talk about paying a lot for a gambly-type character, because that's exactly what this is. It could really come back to haunt you, but at the same time, it could change the game in your favor. It's Storm, Goddess of the Plains, and I really struggled as to which Storm I wanted to include on here because I am a big fan of the 2-cost Storm with the Cerebro combination, but at the same time, we're just looking at AVX. So this is the 4-cost Mask X-Men character. When Storm attacks, reroll each of your opponent's characters. Place any die that does not result in a character in your opponent's prep area. So it's similar to the whole Spider-Man thing where it could make your opponent have nothing, absolutely nothing to block you, and you get a lot of damage through. Like I said, it's gambly because you could also very much roll your opponents up to their level 3 faces, and that could be really scary as well. This is not a card that you would use if you are a consistent-esque kind of player, but if you're up for the gambly, let's see what happens, I want to make this very dramatic, very entertaining, Storm certainly fits. And I guess the other thing with Storm is that I would recommend getting them all. I mean, if you can go and get every Storm in the set, I think every Storm has a place on some team. If you're looking for a character where you're thinking, well, I need some sort of removal, Storm might fit. Any one of the Storms could fit. Goddess of the Plains just happens to be my favorite. Obviously, 8 might be a little high for her. I don't care. She's so much fun to use.
And that was my big question. What puts her up there over... So my go-to Storms would be Wind Rider, the 5-cost, where you reroll up to 2 when she's fielded, and the characters go to used pile if they don't come up character again, and Storm deals 2 damage to your opponent for each die move. Now, she costs 1 more. Or African Priestess, which just rerolls 1 when she's fielded, and if it's not a character, again, it goes to used. I like the extra punishment of putting it into used. If I want something that's going to reroll a whole bunch of dice in a non-targeted way because of, I don't know, something can't be targeted, then I'm actually going to go out of this set, and I'm going to look at something like the rare Umber Hulk from D&D, which costs more to buy and to field, but has a much more of a body for attacking and blocking. So I'm curious what put Goddess of the Plains right there for you, even versus Wind Rider or African Priestess.
Yeah, and that's fair. And you mentioned the Umber Hulk too as well. I just sometimes find that level 3 is hard to move mm-hmm. off the field. You have to keep in mind as well that when you're not as good of a player as other people, you tend to rely a little bit more on luck. And so Goddess of the Plains is one of those cards that I could screw up, which is going to happen. I mean, you've watched me play. But Goddess of the Plains can turn the game around for me. I could be playing horrifically and get Goddess of the Plains out there. You reroll all your characters. I clear your field, and all of a sudden I've come from behind and won. It's not a great strategy, but it is one that some people tend to use if they're not as good at the game. As I get better, Goddess of the Plains will probably move down my list, but as of right now, a card that could completely clear my opponent's field, I could bring out 1 character, you could have 8, and I mean, the likelihood of it happening is slim, but it could still happen. I'll take it. I'll take the opportunity of clearing a board with 1 little X-Men character, 4-cost mask. I'll take it.
Fair enough. All right, then, my number 7 was also RJ's number 10, and this would be Nova, the Human Rocket. The 5-cost rare, he's a bolt character. When he takes damage in an attack step, he deals 2 damage to your opponent. Now, we alluded to this one a little bit earlier on the show. I love this card a lot. I don't think he is seeing the pinnacle of his usage just yet. There's been a lot of talk with Age of Ultron that thanks to cards like Captain America, which has versions that can reduce non-combat damage to 1, that direct damage is going to have to operate differently at the very least. It's not just going to be right to your face the way that it's been in other sets. And surely we already had some tools with that, with Constantine affecting when fielded direct damage, or Human Paladin having some globals. But in this case, because it's each instance of damage that that does the 2, so I ping him, he does 2. I ping him, he does 2. I ping him, he does 2. Captain America might cut that in half. Or he might gain you that 1 life at a time if you're using the other version where you spin him up. He might gain you that 1 life at a time. But I'm still coming out ahead. And this is one of the few direct damage centered cards that allows you to do that. It still can come out at least a 1-to-1. I mean, if you told me that I could have a card that was pay 1, deal a damage to my opponent, and I can do it as like up to, say, 7 times in a turn, I'm going to take that trade every time, and that's why I am a big fan of Nova. I think his stock rises with Age of Ultron.
I struggled to figure out what card was going to be my number 10. Like I mentioned, it was down to about 3, 4, 5 cards, and Nova the Human Rocket did make my number 10 spot, and here's why. I went out to buy the card. First off, I thought that there was a chance that I would build a team around him, that he would be my centerpiece. I watched a lot of other people build Nova-centric teams. There's a reason why. He's a beast. He does a lot of damage in the attack step. You just have to ping him. He's got a big body. I can't get him to work, though. I can't get him to play well in my teams. Every time I've tried, I've failed. But I can accept that Nova is still one of those cards that you have to pick up. That's why he's so low on my list, because I haven't been able to make Nova work. I hope to eventually figure that out. Hopefully it's not too late. Like you said, there's a lot of anti-Nova in this latest set. But nevertheless, Nova is still fun to use, even if I can't win with them.
Well, I would say it's not... There's anti-direct damage in this set, but I think Nova comes through a lot more cleanly than, say, Gabi. Gabi is just stymied. You field what could have been 5-6 damage is only going to be 1. But Nova's going to do 1 every time you ping him. And that's an okay trade. Okay, so it stinks that normally it would be I ping him once and it does 2 to my opponent's face. Now it would only do 1 if I have that Captain America out there. But a one-to-one trade on my energy to damage to you is really not bad. It still puts the game on a significant clock, and I'm not dedicating as much to it the way I would with a Gobby or some of the other direct damage options that we've had.
Yeah.
He certainly, you know, he becomes better because he is the paper cut kind of direct damage, and that's the kind of direct damage that I think we'll see survive the things like Captain. I mean, if your meta uses the Gobbies and whatnot, Captain's going to start making appearances, and I think your local meta will develop very interestingly. The other cool thing is that we have stuff like Pepper Potts, the common. All your blocking characters get +2 until end of turn, so set Nova up to block. Now he has a couple extra defense. You can ping him a couple extra times, and he might even still survive the attack. I mean, plus she's just feeding you bolts at a very low price. So, yeah, lots of reasons to like Nova, and I think I agree with you. We haven't yet seen the best of Nova. I haven't had the greatest time getting Nova teams to work myself, but I think it's coming because of what we have in Age of Ultron.
If there are any Nova experts out there, I think Dave and I would love to take Nova 101, no doubt about it. we're talking direct damage. I put this one up here, and this was another coin flip between the two as to which was going to make the list. I was surprised I put this as high as I did because I think we're going to see a different version of this on your list a little bit later on. Spoilers!
Yes.
Human Torch, Flame On, with quotation marks, which means he's saying it out loud. While Human Torch is active, he deals 1 damage to a character or a player each time you field a character, not 1 damage per die, by the way. Global Payable, when you deal damage with an action die or global ability to deal 1 extra damage to 1 target.
It's a good card.
It's a good card. I want to talk about it a little bit, but I kind of want to wait until we get to yours, because the one that you're using is... it's a better card to use if you are more skilled at the game, because this one doesn't do the damage to the character as well. And what I found when I was trying to build a team with this different version is that I was actually having to hurt my own characters. Mm-hmm. And it was coming back to bite me a little bit. So I do like the fact that you get the global on this one, but I can certainly see the advantages to the other one. So I'm going
to... Well, I can see the advantages to this one, too. And that global certainly can be effective. It's a global that I've used myself before, just in playtesting and some casual teams. I wouldn't necessarily chalk it up to skill. I will say that with the other one, I am sometimes okay, depending on the character, okay with knocking out my own thing, because it's going to come back around again. Now, I won't like to do that if it's a blocker, but I'm okay with doing some damage to my own characters. But recognizing that there are times when you do not want to have to do a damage to a character.
It just occurred to me, we're actually going to talk about this next, because the next two, we're at number 6. The one you have as your number 6 is higher on my list, and the one I have as my number 6 is higher on your list. So let's just go to yours.
Let's just roll up to number 5.
Yeah,
my number 5 then is Human Torch Johnny Storm. Of course, the big brother of Flame On. It's a uncommon, as opposed to the common, but they cost the same. While he's active, each time you field a character, he deals 1 damage to your opponent and 1 damage to a target character. So, yeah, I mean, they're very similar, but there are some pretty notable differences here, too.
Yeah, I mean, I like both Human Torches, whether it be Flame On or Johnny Storm. There's a reason why he's still used so much today. It's not just, you know, for every sidekick you give damage, or for every bolt character you give damage. It's just every time you field a character. It's a pretty sweet card. It's going to stick around for a long time, and I think it's going to be making a lot of noise in almost every meta that's out there.
In both cases, it rewards you for something you were going to do anyway. Now, if you want to play a little more heavy with some of the globals and actions that are going to deal direct damage, like, for example, the Red Dragon or Power Bolts or other things like that, then maybe Flame On is the card for you. But Johnny Storm fits in other circumstances. Of course, he's an integral part of the Johnny Swarm team, which is a lot of fun, and that's, of course, the one where you have all the kobolds and Sturges and the kitchen sink and everything just kind of coming out repeatedly and being fielded and over and over and over again, and your opponent's just like, ah, fine, you win. Unless they come out against you with a Green Goliath, which happened to me, but what are you going to do? I think they both have their purposes. I think they're both worth getting. Luckily, some of the other cards that we have talked and will talk about are simply within the starter set. So if you pick up a starter set, you're going to get several of the cards that we've discussed. Now, I recognize that those are not necessarily the easiest to find at this point, but I think which card, which Human Torch is for you, if you had to pick one, you kind of got to go with your play style, which you think it's going to fit in with.
As we move up the list here, I'm noticing that we have a lot of the same characters here, and there's a reason for it, and that's just because they're really solid. Now, my number five I had much higher than you did. This was your number 10, Nick Fury Patch. And there's a reason why I have it really high up here. The four-cost shield, while Nick Fury is active, your unblocked Avengers characters deal damage to your opponent twice. It's no surprise. I love the Avengers. I'm a big fan of the Avengers. I'm quite often going to have a few Avengers in the field. At some point, you're going to have to say, well, I guess I'll let this one through, and all of a sudden they are hitting for double the amount of damage. If you bring any sort of ability that gets your attack a little bit higher, your damage a little bit higher, all of a sudden you're doing an extra two damage instead of just one. I really love teams built around Patch. I understand that he's fallen off the meta a little bit, but if you're running an Avengers team, I think that Patch almost has to be on there. Unless you've got a team that's just full of huge characters with huge fielding costs, then maybe you look at Mr. Anger, but Patch is the way to go, I think, if you're playing unlimited. You have to use Patch if you're using an Avengers team.
Well, yeah, Patch is the way to go, especially if you want to use smaller Avengers. They become very large Avengers. And we saw that, of course, with what he could do with Ant-Man at Nationals, in fact. And it's not just that he's fallen off a little bit. And I mean, at Nationals, I can't remember in the rest of that tournament, but I know for a fact that I was the only one in top eight who did bring Patch. And the great thing about that top eight was that it was everybody's one-ofs, the cards that, like, were the unique cards to that player that were the key elements to their team. And some of them we've already hit upon here. Some of them we will come to. But I like him a lot. The problem that I have with him, the slight problem, because he's still on my list, he was my number 10, is that he's got to be on the field with other stuff around him in order to be effective. You need to make sure that those Avengers are going to go through unblocked. You need to just... He really requires a plan. If you're going to have him there, he's your whole team. And that's what he was for me. It was Patch, Ant-Man, Hulk. And that's how I got to where I got. I think he's still viable. I think we're going to see some really cool stuff with him in Age of Ultron, especially as combat becomes much, much more important, given that we have cheap things like Hulk out there. So, yeah, I mean, why was he 5 for you versus 10 for me? I don't know if I could exactly quantify what put him where he was on my list. I knew I wanted him on my top 10, but we also haven't seen him for a while. I think he kind of needs to earn his way back, if that makes sense.
Although I will say, if you're playing Little Cup, Nick Fury, Mr. Anger. Nick Fury in AVX is just great.
Nick Fury in Age of Ultron,
He doesn't exist.
I agree.
He's the Rocky Five of the of the Dice Masters world. And if anyone didn't get that reference, shame on you.
You know, it's interesting because you've really been on this Rocky kick lately in your commentary.
It's what I do. I am a huge Rocky Balboa fan. I really am. I like the fact that he takes a bunch of punches. He takes the hits. It's not how much you can hit. It's how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And, you know, that sort of fits the theme of the next character who we both had as our number 4.
It really does. Yeah, we had some cohesion right here.
This is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Take it away.
All right, I want to say it. Hulk, Jade Giant. Now, this is not the Hulk that made a lot of noise when... this was not the Hulk that many people were using at one point in time. This is the one where while Hulk is active, when either you or Hulk takes damage, knock out one of your opponent's level 1 characters on its burst face, which is level 1 or 2. Instead, knock out one opposing character of any level. Now, I love this card because it is the perfect counter to another version of him. And it's so crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, Jade Giant, all you have to do is ping him, and you're knocking out a very, very powerful other Hulk that is... It was all over the meta. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain that JT was the one that took Jade Giant to Canadian Nationals and just shocked a lot of people.
You are correct. JT did indeed take JG to CN. And we'll stop using abbreviations right now. But yes, he did take Jay Giant there, and he did quite well with it. I think that Jay Giant doesn't get the respect that it deserves. We thought that there was going to be more Jay Giant after what happened at Canadian Nationals. I don't know if people didn't give the results from that the respect that they deserved, or if it was just because Canats did not receive the level of coverage that some of the other events did. But Jay Giant is real. And especially nowadays when people are looking and kind of fawning over Wasp, well, Wasp deals damage, so fine, go ahead and hit me with Wasp, and then I'm knocking your Wasp out. Or I'll just happily activate this global that does ramp for me, and Wasp is going to deal me a damage, so now I get to activate my Jade Giant too. Ha ha. I like him so much. I think that there's a lot that he does. Again, it's great for targeted removal. And, I mean, I don't know. I can't say enough about this card. I think he's on his way up a little bit. It just depends on how people are going to be playing, as with everything.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at our list here, and it looks like your number three is higher on my list. And
it is.
My number three is higher on your list, but my number three is also your number two, so I guess we can just continue talking about the Hulk for a little while longer?
We sure can, because my number two was Hulk Green Goliath. This is the Hulk that we've alluded to many times here. It took everybody by storm. I used it. So many people have used it. While Hulk is active, whenever you or Hulk take damage, Hulk deals two damage to each opposing character, no matter how many Hulks are fielded. And on the burst phase, which is his level one or level two, he deals three damage instead. So whereas Jade Giant provides the targeted removal, Hulk just kind of wantonly slaps at everything, hits at everything, demolishes everything, gets it out of your way, and then you swing through. He was a key element to my Patch Avengers team that I took to U.S. Nationals. I got Patch out, I got my Hulk, ping, ping, your field's gone, and now I attack with Hulk and Ant-Man with double damage, and you're probably gone.
Do you think Polymorph is the most popular basic action card right now in the game?
I think Worlds would tell us that, yes, in fact, it is. I think that what you have to start watching out for, though, is the defensive use of Polymorph. A lot of people like to Polymorph out those six costers, and I think we're going to see that continue with some of the other six costers we're getting, like, oh, I don't know, Magneto, Magnetic Monster. But I don't know. It has its pluses and its minuses, and certainly the global is quite useful. But you also have to watch for it being used against you. You have this giant Hulk. Oh, okay, all of a sudden I'm polymorphing that out for your little cheap 2-3-cost character that I don't care about.
Yeah, I do think that Polymorph is one of the reasons why Green Goliath became so popular, because, oh, I have to bring Hulk in on the level 1 face. Well, okay, I don't mind that he's 6-5 when he's got a burst face and he's doing 3 damage every time I ping him with something. I just think Green Goliath is one of those stereotypical characters of, okay, I actually don't want him on his highest level because he's so much more powerful on the lower level. Anytime a card like Green Goliath just takes over a meta, I think you have to get it. It's the highest rated card for me in this set that's not a super rare.
Fair enough. Well, it's the highest rated card for me in this set that's at least not a rare. But, I hear you there. It's an excellent card. I mean, obviously, that's been recognized. Jay Giant is the answer to Green Goliath, and I think Jay Giant will be better equipped to handle some of the other things that are coming up than Green Goliath, because there are times when... So the big problem with Green Goliath is that if you have one versus the other, they just basically both slap at each other until they're both gone. But Jay Giant ends that back and forth right there. So, you know, you kind of pick your poison with one or the other. This one can sweep everything, but you, on the other hand, you're sweeping everything. Jay Giant can take care of it. It's that surgical strike.
It is the most common uncommon card that you're probably going to see when you're playing Dice Masters.
Sure, probably at this point. We'll see what makes it. I think that, I don't know, I think people are going to look at that Ultron Drone uncommon and fall in love.
Oh, that's true. Oh, we got some competition.
Well, I mean, it's early yet in the set, but I think people are going to see that and really fall in love.
Oh, yeah, I agree 100%. 100%.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us about your number two, which was my number six.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised to see it so low on your list, but I think I think it has become a little bit less important as the game has gone on. But nevertheless, Black Widow, Serena, 2-cost Fist, Avenger. When Black Widow attacks, she deals 2 damage to your opponent can prevent this by spinning one of his or her characters down 1 level. In my humble opinion, it's the best 2-cost in the game. I've seen people win games just from buying her. You know, if you can get her out early enough, if you're going first and you can field a bunch of Serenas, you're going to be doing a lot of damage. It's also, unfortunately, the most expensive card to buy as a single right now, which is really unfortunate. And it's tough when you have an AVX gravity feed where you're not going to pull a super rare every time. And I mean, you do have the benefit of if you do pull a super rare, you've got a 50% chance of getting one of the best 2 cards in the game, in my opinion. But it's so hard to get. So if you get an opportunity to trade for Serena, you almost have to take it because any of the other cards that you would be trading for Serena, you're more likely to get, with the exception of maybe my number one.
Serena is great, and she works well with Patch. She works well with a lot of other cards. WizKids, of course, recognized her greatness by making her into that fantastic alternate art WizKids open card, and of course, I'm lucky to own one of those. I mean, it's really cool. She's a wonderful card, and that's why she's number 6 on my list. The reason that she wasn't higher is that, as you say, her stock has fallen off somewhat. You know, if I have Green Goliath, and we all know that it's very easy to quickly get a Green Goliath. If I have Green Goliath, I'm hesitant. I know my opponent's going to be hesitant to use a Serena against me. Where we have started to see Serena now is sometimes in the later game as kind of a, okay, get in and get those last couple damage piece. Of course, we saw at Worlds that Constantine actually overtook her in the top 16. 11 Constantines appeared and only 10 Serenas. I say only, that's still a lot. But, yeah, her stock has fallen off somewhat. What you can win with just her, especially if your opponent is unprepared for it. But your reliance on her can also absolutely destroy you.
Yeah, it's very true. And I would say as well, Constantine, we hadn't really seen a really dominant 2-cost until Constantine came out. And I mean, actually, yeah, of the two, I would probably lean more toward using Constantine. So maybe I shouldn't say that Serena's the best 2-cost, but she's up there. She's in the discussion for sure. And as we get more interesting Avenger love, which I don't know if this game needs anymore, but if we do, I mean, we could possibly see Serena make a little bit more of a comeback. It's still a really good card, and like I said, it's one of those cards that I just think everybody should have.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You should know how to use her and how to play against her, for certain. All right, then, let's move up to the number ones. My number one was your number 6, much like how your number 2 is my number 6. My number 1 is Wolverine, formerly Weapon 10. This card has been there on some really, really high-performing teams. For example, the Dave Walsh's U.S. Nationals winning team or Dave Walsh's World's runner-up team. He's really written the book on how to use this card, and all the credit in the world to him. I mean, playing some very, very early games when we were kind of first feeling out the Daredevil draft format, I remember Katie just ran over me with a Wolverine, formerly Weapon 10, because that's what she... That's how she pulled the dice out and the Wolverine that she chose to take absolutely ran over me. It was tough. And she had that, and I think I had a Black Widow Serena on mine. And it was just once she got the Weapon 10 and was able to mess around with my blocks, that was it. It's a very good card. It's just, I mean, its stats are ridiculous. And then the fact that when it attacks alone, it gets +4/+4. The fact that it only costs 4... It's just an insanely powerful card, and if you use it the right way, it just is devastating. I mean, all it has to do is connect once on level 2 or level 3, and all of a sudden your opponent has to play much, much more defensively.
I think even on level 1, it changes everything your opponent has to do. It's the most efficient 4-cost in the game for doing damage. It's unbelievable that there's a card that is a 4-cost that is only a rare that can do potentially 12 damage. I just think that's borderline broken, and I remember Dave Walsh mentioning that on the stream when he first mentioned it. Wolverine Weapon, formerly Weapon 10, pardon me, because he is no longer Weapon 10, is certainly one of those cards that is going to always be known as the the Dave Walsh card. You know, the card that he really just
pioneered.
Pioneered, and like you mentioned, wrote the book on. I think similar to how Solomon Grundy is always going to be the one I think of when I think of Dean, because nobody looked at it before he did. Now everyone's using it. I do like formerly Weapon 10. I do think people need to pick it up for sure. I rated it a little bit lower just because one basic action card really sort of ended Walsh's run at Nationals, and I'm really looking forward to see what he does. I'm sure he'll keep using formerly Weapon 10, but because of the fact it can just easily be distracted back with one mask, I just think hurts a lot of its ability. And again, a lot of these rankings on my list are because of, hey, I wouldn't be able to use Wolverine properly, so if you're like me, it's probably not as important. But it was one of the first ones that I went out and purchased, along with Nova, Patch, and some of the other rares from the AVX set, because I can definitely see why it's getting a lot of play.
Of course, anything can be distraction back that you're going to rely on for combat damage. The big difference between Nationals and Worlds was that Nationals, I believe Dave was running the Doom Caliber Knight.
Yes.
You pay the fist when you attack and he can't be affected. He did not have that card. In fact, I believe he used instead the one where you knock it out and cancel an action. I believe he used that Doom Caliber Knight.
Yeah.
Because he was worried about Prismatic Spray, among other actions. So that kind of prevented him from being able to use what he used. Now, that Manticore slot could have defended against some of the Swarm we saw and everything. It also could have, I guess you could use the Human Paladin to replace what you're missing with that Global, but then there's something else to feel. But those are the decisions that you have to make. And in the end, ultimately, it didn't work out. But my goodness, I mean, it didn't work out in that he did not win Worlds. But I mean, I think I would take second place at a competition that large.
I would take 35th. All the credit in the world to him for being able to use that card. The fact that you have to attack alone, it's sort of the same reason. I love Black Panther, but it's never going to be one of my absolute go-tos for that reason, just because it can be shut down. But we're going to find, somehow, I'm sure of it, Walsh is going to find a way to make Wolverine even better with the new cards that are out there in a way that I would never have thought of. And maybe Wolverine jumps up a little bit higher the second time we do this top 10 AVX list. But as of right now, I'll put it at 6, but I can fully understand why it's number 1 on yours. I could never put Wolverine that high.
Fair enough.
Even though I'm Canadian, it feels like it's a traitor move, you know?
Fair enough. Well, okay, so let's talk about your number 1, which I completely understand why you put it there, but I did not. Let's hear what you have to say. This was my number 3, for the record.
Yeah, just a few months ago, it seemed like this guy was on every team, but he wasn't being used. But it was just there because people knew he could be really good. It's the one super rare of AVX, the one super rare of all the sets that I absolutely need to get my hands on. And if you're willing to send it to me for free, I will accept it. Green Goblin Gobby, the 3-cost bolt villain. When fielded, Green Goblin deals 1 damage to your opponent for each sidekick in the field, and you're only counting your sidekicks. Now, for a 3-cost of a 2-2-3-3-5-5 with a fielding cost of 2, like a 0-1-1, that's insane. And being able to just field your Green Goblin, deal damage to your opponent for your sidekicks, and then Blue Eyes him right back, so you're just continuously fielding Gobby and dealing so much damage, is just crazy. Now, yes, the Age of Ultron, Captain America may shut this down, but it's only a matter of time before I think Gobby makes a comeback on that. And I want this card so badly, and it bugs the heck out of me every time I go to build a team and I think I would want to use Gobby, because it's one of those cards that I don't think requires a ton of skill to play. It's just so good. If you can get it, you need to. It may be, I think right now it's the third highest individual cost for a card behind Serena and Constantine, but for whatever reason, it seems like it's more difficult to find Gobby right now because people don't want to give him up unless they've got a bunch of doubles. So if you get an opportunity, you got to pick this guy up.
Well, here are the couple of problems with Gobby. And now, he was still my number 3. I like him a lot. I've used him very well. I've runner up some stuff with him and everything like that. One, I would say that Worlds was Gobby's comeback. I think he's going to have to regroup yet again if we're going to see him. Two, he relies on sidekicks, which are one of the most high-variance characters that you can get out there in the game. Yes, you're going to incidentally roll sidekicks, and Gobby teams, you're happy, whereas on other teams, it's like, oh, man, I got this sidekick I'm stuck with. That feels good, but he's still relying on one of the most high-variance dice that you're going to have in the game. Three, not just Captain America, but Human Paladin Global, and of course, Constantine. Constantine will just mess up any Gabi, because it's a when-fielded ability. And Constantine, you just name it, strip him of his powers. That's pretty significant. Now, at crucial points, I was able to get around that by recognizing that Constantine was going to be a thing. I would buy Prismatic Spray, and of course, you can spray Constantine's ability away, leaving Gabi to be able to be fielded and do his thing for that turn. But those are all things that I think are going to make Gabi teams, one, require a higher skill level than what you're indicating to be able to play, and two, have a backseat. So some of the tools were already there, and now we're getting more of them that aren't bad in their own right because of other things that they protect against. This mitigation for Gabi is not hard to build in, and this mitigation for Gabi also protects you from other things, not just Gabi. So that's why I think he's back a step. I think he's a great card. I think he's worth having. You certainly should know how to play against him as well as how to play with him. But I don't know that he is of that caliber anymore.
We'll have to wait and see whether he has lost. I mean, he has lost a step. There's no debating that. But just a matter of how much of a step back he's going to take. And I think the fact that so many people are building teams specifically to beat him and to stop him and to play around him and to deal with him in general, I think it just shows how good Gabi is. And I'm happy that Green Goblin is such a really good card when it comes to Dice Masters. Speaking of
all three of them. All three of them.
Yeah.
I mean, the common, which buffs the sidekicks, the rare, which Nog, I mean, my gosh, we were using him for ramp very, very early on before we had Professor X. And, of course, Gabi himself. I mean, his die, no matter what your purchase cost, which version, his die still has the same great stats at the same low cost. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why Gabi is great, but I think his ability is just a bit lesser, and I think it's something that, while it's still a force, is more balanced within the game right now with the cards that we have. Another way that I try to use to get around the fact that, yeah, he was going to be Constantined was to not just have Johnny Storm, but to also use Black Manta. So, fine, maybe you Prismatic Sprayed my Gabi, but I'm knocking him out. I'm still getting you in for some damage with Retaliation.
And even if you keep him on the field, that 5-5 looks pretty sweet on level 3 with a 3-cost bolt. I mean, so cool.
Sure does.
So cool.
So that's the list that I came up with, and that's the list that you came up with. We agreed on some, though not on the positioning. We had one dead on. I don't know. I think that you could go by either list and be pretty happy with what you have and have some tools to really play very, very well. I would say that if it's a super rare, you don't necessarily need to have. Sorry, hang on. I would say that as far as the super rares are concerned, you don't necessarily need to have those two super rares that we mentioned. If you get the other 8 cards that are on my list or the other 8 cards that are on RJ's list, you're going to have a pretty solid selection there without having to shell out for the super rares. But at least understand what those super rares can do to a matchup so you understand how to play against them. They're not unbeatable, and you don't need to skew everything to do it, but you do need to know how to play against things. Just like, you know, a manager in baseball is going to play the shift in the field because a player has a tendency to hit a certain direction. That doesn't mean that player's broken. It just means you got to shift a little bit in order to compensate for it.
But don't shift too much. You don't want to be benching Daryl Strawberry after he's hit 9 home runs because the pitcher is now left-handed or something. But I'm just looking at your list, comparing it to mine. It was a Simpsons reference. It's a great episode. Look it up. It's fantastic. You're right. You don't need Serena. You don't need Gabi. If you can get them, great. But my advice would be, if you're looking to get all the really good cards from a set without spending a lot of money, one, buy the starter set for AVX. Two, just go out there and purchase like a commons, uncommon set and just get the few rares that you need. If you're going to run Avengers, get Patch. If you want to try out the direct damage team, get Nova. If you want to be a mean, terrible person, get Angelo Fortunato. And formerly Weapon X, I mean, I think everybody should pick him up just to to learn how that card has single-handedly, well, not single-handedly, but it been such a huge part of a Nationals champion and a Worlds champion. So that's what I would say of the AVX. Get the starter set, get a few of the rares, and start rolling bones. It's so much fun.
Have some fun, absolutely. All right, so tell us, do you think we left something out? Do you think we dramatically overrated something? We want to know.
I feel like you're looking at me when you say that.
No. Maybe. No. We want to hear from you, and we have so many different ways that you can do that. Of course, please, we appreciate the reviews on iTunes, the continued positive reviews especially. That's just, it's so great to know that something that we're doing you feel is worthwhile. That's wonderful. I mean, we really just take so much out of that. That's great. We do it anyway, but it helps us feel better to know that somebody's getting some meaning from it. So thank you. That helps our visibility significantly. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at The Reserve Pool, and we have our wonderful website where even you too can have a blog of your own talking about whatever you like about Dice Masters. But you can talk on the forums, you can contribute to the wiki, you can comment on articles, you can really do, well, pretty much whatever you want within the bounds of the rules.
I just realized that your initials are DM. So you were either going to be really good at this game or role-playing. Either way, you're rolling a lot of dice, I'm guessing.
It's true. It's true. And either way, dice that displease me get kind of put in jail for a little while.
Ooh, scary.
I have had sets of sidekicks that were like, you're not working too well for me. I'm retiring you for a bit.
I could just see you like throwing them in a wood stove or something.
No, I'm not Tom Vassell on Board Game Breakfast.
And you also don't live in Canada where you have a wood stove because it's like, you know, 55
below. That's right, I don't have a wood stove.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you have a wood stove, we'd also like to know that, too. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you spending your time with us. As we always say, there are so many ways you could spend it. It means a lot that you spend some of it here. I'm Dave.
I'm RJ. Don't throw your dice in the fire. You could give them to people that play at your local store.
And this is The Reserve Pool.
Whew.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you again soon.